This is NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The 424 members of the New Hampshire legislature are taking a collective, deep sigh of relief after the swirl of activity surrounding last week's crossover day when the House and Senate exchanged bills. No major events are scheduled this week, with one exception. The Senate Judiciary Committee Thursday holds a hearing on a death penalty repeal bill, which has already passed the House. Soon, though, the pace will pick up with passionate debates on such issues as the minimum wage and casino gambling. And as lawmakers decide, yay or nay, in the coming weeks, political analyst Dean Spiliotis says they'll do so with one eye firmly placed on this fall's elections.
The politics really are a combination of sort of wrapping up these compromises that have been underway for some time, like the gas tax, but also each side, you know, making a statement with certain pieces of legislation, like the Democrats will do with that minimum wage legislation in the House.
Today on The Exchange, it's halftime at the State House. We'll find out what major bills crossed over and what their fate may be. Two State House reporters join us, and later we'll hear from House and Senate leaders. Let's hear from you, too. What's your midterm grade for the legislature? What do you hope happens next on some of these issues? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. With us in studio, Kathleen Ronayne, State House reporter for the Concord Monitor. Kathleen, thanks for taking time out for us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader, New Hampshire Sunday News. And Gary, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Well, and Gary, you're a veteran of these crossover days and the New Hampshire legislature. But every session has its own feel, Gary, its own priorities, its own politics. How would you describe this year at this critical halftime point, Gary?
Well, this year we have something we haven't had for quite some time, which is a split House and Senate in terms of who's in the majority, that democratically controlled House and the Republican controlled Senate. And so that's made for some interesting kind of interactions. But in terms of just the overall feel, it's been kind of, I would hate to say uneventful, but compared to some past years, it's been a little less fireworks than we've seen in some times. The House has been kind of slow and plodding, and it takes a long time to get through. But actually, they ended up finishing one day early this year. And the Senate's taken a kind of light load, if you will. Haven't had a lot of sessions. So they had a lot to do at the end. And that was a very long day with a lot of big bills to deal with. But generally speaking, it's been a lot less acrimonious than you've seen in some past years. Although I think that the fireworks will probably come toward the end of the session.
Yeah, right, as they often
as
do,
as they do,
Gary.
In an election year, always.
Right. Well, and it's interesting. I was talking to a political reporter last week, and I can't remember who it was, but she said she actually has liked this session so far, Gary, because they've had to work things out, divided government.
They had to. They've had to do a lot of compromising. And I think ultimately you get a lot better legislation when that happens because all the voices get heard from both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. What do you think, Kathleen? How would you describe the session thus far?
Well, this is my first year covering the State House, so I don't really have too much to compare it to. But what I have noticed, as Gary said, the House did seem to be moving a little slow to me. But it's also interesting to watch because they can have as much debate as they want on every topic. So, it's been fun for me to kind of experience that and see how the House is different from the Senate. The Senate seems to move on with things a lot more quickly than the House does. Their debates are usually a lot shorter. They have taken up less bills, as Gary said. But, I would agree with Gary that there isn't too much there's tension, definitely, but it's not very acrimonious at all. And there's not too much fighting within, the caucuses or within the House and Senate. But I think I still have a lot to learn and see what happens when we get to Committee of Conference because that is going to be, I'm sure, we're going to see a lot of different pieces of legislation or different amendments coming out that maybe we weren't expecting.
And we'll definitely talk about some of those issues that hour. Talking about the House and how it kind of has been slowed down, and you've said you've been interested, Kathleen, in looking at just how it operates. 400 members, one of the largest legislative bodies in the English-speaking world. Former Speaker Donna Sitek used to say it was like herding cats, so there's some of that there. Yeah. The phone number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. We're taking stock of the legislature so far. At this halftime point, with crossover day last week, the House's bills go to the Senate and vice versa. Join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477, especially some of the issues that you've been watching and what you hope happens in the latter half of this session. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And Kathleen and Gary, we'll spend most of the hour talking about what we bills that we can expect to hear a lot about, those compromises that are going to have to be made, as both of you said. But first, Gary, just remind us, one big issue has already been resolved.
Well, it has. It's taken almost 2 years, but it's finally been resolved, which is Medicaid expansion. That last Tuesday, they spent all day debating it pretty much in the House, 9 Republican amendments to it, all of which went down by fairly substantial numbers. And it was signed into law Thursday by Governor Hassan.
And that was a big deal.
And that was
a big
deal. Yeah. It's a very big deal. It will bring about 50,000 people health insurance paid for through the Medicaid program. The unique part about it is that the ultimately the state will use private insurers to cover the newly eligible people, which it, I think only Arkansas and Iowa are the other two states that have similar programs.
And there are a lot of question marks still over this.
Oh, there still are. And we got a long ways to go, that's for sure.
But that's one of the big issues that has sucked up a lot of the political oxygen in the legislature for the last couple years, especially the last year. We've been calling sort of Medicaid, gas taxes, and casino gambling the big three from this legislative session, which started last year. So Medicaid's taken care of for the moment. Kathleen, gas taxes, surprisingly, seems like we might see some agreement on that.
Yes, it has passed through the Senate, a one-time 4-cent increase, so that would bring in about $32 million annually. It's written in the bill that all of it would go towards road and bridge projects, which was a big selling point for some Republicans in the Senate who voted for it. Not all of them did. And I think that it has a very good chance of getting through the House. Obviously, Democrats are not quite as skeptical about raising taxes as Republicans are. So I think it has a very good chance of getting through there. We all know that we need money for roads and bridges, and this bill does that. It's definitely not as much as Democrats had wanted. It's not even as much as the prime sponsor of the bill, Jim Rausch, who's a Republican senator, wanted. He wanted increases every 4 years tied to the consumer price index. So it's a little bit less, but it is something. And the governor, said in her State of the State address that she'd be willing to sign that. So I think that is one thing we're gonna get through this year. And it also guarantees money for the widening of the I-93 project. And what actually it's written into the legislation that the gas tax would repeal within 20 years when or the increase, the 4-cent increase would be repealed when the bonds on the I-93 project are paid off. So definitely some things in there to sweeten it for Republicans in the Senate a little bit. And now that it's through that chamber, I think that we're going to see it pass and get to the governor's desk.
I would also, repealing is sort of like, can I sell you the Brooklyn Bridge? But, that's 20 years down the road. But
putting it off.
Yeah. I think there are a couple of landmines here, though, in the House, one of which is the doing away with the exit 12 tolls, ramp tolls on the F.E. Everett Turnpike, which was a favorite project of former Senate President Peter Bragdon. It costs about $250,000 that the state turnpike system would lose if they took those out. So that's a little bit of a problem because the House has never really kind of liked that kind of pick and choose of closing tolls and opening tolls and that sort of thing. The other thing is the I-93 expansion, which after the first 2 years when the $32 million all goes to local bridges and roads, about half the money would go to pay after the first 2 years. About half the money raised from the gas tax will go to pay off these bonds, which obviously impact mostly Salem to Manchester. And a lot of North Country people are saying, what's in it for me?
Or Western New Hampshire, people who don't travel on I-93.
Right, and they're saying, why is all this money going for this? And so I think it's not going to be – I think it will pass the House ultimately – but it's not going to be quite a slam dunk.
What about that toll issue, Gary? You described it pretty well, but this is a toll booth in Merrimack again that people right. there have long felt we are overtolled. So Peter Bragdon, as you said, the senator from that area, said, "Yeah, I'll go for the gas tax, but you gotta remove this toll booth that has been right. just a thorn in our sides for so long." What do you think the House is going to do?
Well, they've had numerous attempts over the years to remove these three Merrimack tolls. I mean, you have to go back in history a little ways. And when they were redoing the Effie Everett Turnpike, Merrimack wanted all these tolls, all these exits so that they could, well, one of them was a digital company was there, and there's Anheuser-Busch and so others. And so they wanted these three ramps or exits in there. And the state said, well, we'll do that, but you're going to pay for it because we're going to put tolls on it.
I see.
And so they want to take them out now. They're saying it's paid off, but the state's saying, no, those bonds aren't paid off yet.
Well, we're going to have House Speaker Terry Norelli with us a little bit later, so we'll ask her perhaps about that. Let's go to our listeners now. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Eric's joining us from Harrisville. Hi, Eric. You're on the air. Go ahead.
How are you doing today?
Fine. Go ahead, Eric.
Good. Sure. I just wanted to, make a comment about the state legislature, and the Senate. I just moved to New Hampshire from New York State about, a little over a year ago. And I was really impressed with the way this legislature works here in New Hampshire. I read some articles, like on Huffington Post, saying that, New Hampshire is crazy for having so much representation. But, it's such a large body. I forgot how much it's like, one representative for every 3,000 people, something like that. But, me personally, I can appreciate that, and also the fact that it's, even though it has a Democratic majority, it still has a good representation of the other side. I think that's how you get balanced legislation, me personally. Coming from New York, where it's dominated by the Democratic Party, everything just goes one way. But, I can appreciate a good discussion and then at the end getting a good compromise bill.
Well, Eric, welcome to New Hampshire. And that's one of the pleasures of living in a purple state, right, Kathleen?
Yes, I'm actually originally from New York State, so I definitely can appreciate the differences between how the legislature works there versus how it works here.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you for calling in. And you can join us, too, with your questions and comments about halftime. Time at the New Hampshire State House. Again, crossover day was last week. We're taking a closer look at some of the bills that changed hands from the House to the Senate side and vice versa. Join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. New Hampshire humorist P.J. O'Rourke has published his first new book since 2007. You can hear him read from his new book, The Baby Boom, and listen in as he speaks with NHPR's Virginia Prescott about what makes his generation unique. Join us at the Music Hall in Portsmouth on April 18th. Visit themusichall.org for tickets. Writers on a New England Stage is a partnership between New Hampshire Public Radio and the Music Hall. More on Crossover Day at the New Hampshire State House on the Exchange, and then attend on the Diane Rehm Show. We get an update on the Affordable Care Act. New Hampshire weather, partly sunny today with high temperatures, low to mid-40s. Support for NHPR comes from UR listeners, and support also comes from Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping the community thrive for over 145 years with 7 full-service branches in Bogue, Kentucky, Concord, and Nashua. TheMerrimack.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a check-in with the State House during this session's halftime point with Crossover Day last week. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. What's your midterm grade for the legislature at this point? What do you hope happens next on some of these issues that we've been talking about, whether it's the gas tax, expanded gambling, a death penalty repeal? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Joining us now on the phone is Jeb Bradley, Republican senator from Wolfboro, majority leader for the Senate. And Senator Bradley, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura. How are you on this gorgeous day?
Well, and thank goodness for that. How are you feeling, Senator Bradley, about the work of the legislature and especially the Senate at this midpoint?
Well, I think that, your two reporters have summed it up pretty accurately. More bipartisan cooperation than you see in Washington. We've gotten major legislation passed in terms of, the health protection plan, which will help low-income people. That was bipartisan legislation. There's been some controversial legislation, too, that is yet unresolved. But I think the tone has been much more civil than certainly I experienced when I was in Washington, and I think voters probably think that's a good thing.
I want to ask you, Senator Bradley, about one major bill that will get a hearing this week before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that's the death penalty repeal that the House sent over to you folks in the Senate. Any idea, Senator Bradley, about how that might go? I know it's a big question mark.
I think that it will either be 13-11, one way or the other, or potentially 12-12. Just in talking to people, it's not an issue that either myself or Senator Morse, the Senate President, are going to try to convince people to vote one way or the other. It's a conscience vote, but just from what people are telling me, I think it's going to be very close.
Wow.
And from my own perspective, the death penalty hasn't been used in New Hampshire in 70-plus years. It's very narrow. It's limited to attacks against law enforcement, or in the case of the Mount Vernon murders a few years ago, something like that. And I don't think we have any of the problems associated with the death penalty that other states have potentially experienced because it's used so sparingly.
So as a senator, you'll be voting to keep the death penalty on the
books,
Senator Bradley.
I will be voting to keep the current law.
Yeah, you piqued my interest there. You said it could be 12-12. What happens then?
Well, you can't pass something if it's 12-12, so a tie would mean the repeal would be defeated.
A couple other bills I want to ask you about, Senator Bradley. Decriminalizing marijuana, that's something else that the House sent over to you.
Yeah, and I think this one is something that people will look at. I think just speaking from my own personal view of it, you know, when a youngster or a young adult has the first offense for marijuana possession or use, I don't think we want to see that person have a lifetime of legal problems as a result of, you know, one indiscretion. So whether it will be as, you know, harmless as a traffic ticket, I think that's something that folks will be a little skeptical about. But in terms of, you know, a lifetime worth of problems, I'm not sure that people want to see that happening either.
So reducing the penalties, perhaps?
I think that that's a logical outcome.
Why do you think, Senator Bradley, there has been so much legislation this year surrounding marijuana? We've seen legalization, we've seen decriminalization. What's going on there?
You know, that's a good question. I think it may have something to do with, you know, what the voters in Colorado and Washington State have done in the past in terms of decriminalizing and, in fact, legalizing. And I think the medical marijuana debate has had something to do with it, too. I mean, I voted for medical marijuana after years of thinking it was not the right thing to do, but listening to patients and some very difficult situations that cancer patients in particular face, and having seen it a little bit in my own family with my sister, who's quite ill at the moment, I just thought that the time had come to do it correctly. And I think that when we passed that bill last year after numerous attempts, that probably heightened the issue a little bit in people's minds.
I want to ask you about an issue, Senator Bradley, that's near and dear to your heart. You had promoted a bill, we talked about it earlier this year, to encourage the burial of power lines. What happened to that legislation?
Well, that bill is on the table. And, I've taken the feedback from the opponents of the bill to heart. It will take a supermajority to take it off the table, although there's a companion bill that the House has sent us that is in the Senate that could possibly be amended to incorporate something that's less of a mandate for burial and would take cost into consideration as to whether it's in the public interest to bury power lines. Look, I've said this many times. I think, you know, Northern Pass is the example that everybody's concerned about today, but there are going to be other transmission projects in New Hampshire and other New England states, and, you know, 135-foot towers, even 100-foot towers, do have an impact on people's property values in proximity to the project. And so for some of these things to be permitted, whether it's Northern Pass or, you know, potential other projects, there, I think, will have to be burial of these lines in a lot of places. And so what I'm going to try to do with this bill is to remove the mandate and just encourage the creation of the corridors so that state rights of ways and private property can be used for underground burial of transmission lines, and then expect that as projects go to the site evaluation committee, that in order to protect scenic vistas, property values, et cetera, there will be instances, and probably quite a few, where burial will occur. Obviously, with cost as a consideration, that will be taken into account. But, you know, in the Northern Pass instance, Laura, 187 miles, thousands of New Hampshire residents with property in close proximity, if not directly abutting the power line, I think that while we need new energy sources, we can't be sacrificing, you know, a lot of hardworking New Hampshire families to economic decline of their own situation because they lose value in their primary investment, their home and property.
Well, Senator Bradley, hold on if you could. I think Gary Reno with the union leader wants to ask you a question.
Hello, Jeb. How are you?
Good morning, Gary. I'm great.
That's good. I was just wondering, you said, you know, selectively burying the lines. And I was just, you know, what's somebody to stop somebody from saying, well, they buried it here, but I have a 130-foot tower and just across the street from my house. I mean, don't you really almost have to bury all of it?
Well, I think that if you look at the, for instance, Northern Pass proposal, some of it goes through a lot of forest lands up north. The Wagner property, for instance, goes through the White Mountain National Forest. So it's not always in people's backyards where it's affecting property values. And so I think that you can take an approach that buries it in the places that really impact scenic vistas and property values. But every mile of the 187 miles, I don't think it needs to be buried. And I think that if we can encourage the use of corridors, you will have, you know, other alternative surface for a route that may make sense to get this energy from Canada into the New England market, but without some of the impacts
that people,
you know,
are so worried about. Senator Bradley, I want to ask you one last question, if I could, and it's more of a political question. The fall elections, as you know, aren't that far away. On which of these issues before the Senate do you think it's especially important for Republicans to be on record as having supported or opposed? Which ones are going to be talked about most in this fall's campaigns?
Look, I think it always comes down to the economy, and health care is a big portion of that, clearly. The Federal Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, is going to be a huge issue in the fall. But I think people vote their pocketbook in New Hampshire, and so the fact that we had a budget that met the needs of the state of New Hampshire without raising a single tax or a single fee and you know, did not overborrow or use for the budget, I think that is going to be a strong selling point for why there should be more Republicans in Concord. Certainly that's, you know, what I'll be talking about as I get out and talking to people. And I think, you know, because of that, the sound fiscal management that we've had for the last several years, you've seen a declining unemployment rate. The economy is starting to get better, and I think people are recognizing that. And it didn't come from, you know, overspending, overtaxing, over-regulating businesses.
Okay. Senator Bradley, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Laura. Have a great day.
You too. That's Jeb Bradley, Republican Senator from Wolfboro, Majority Leader for the Senate. A little bit later in the hour, we'll talk to Terry Norelli, Democrat from Portsmouth, and the House Speaker. You can join us with your questions and comments on some of these issues that we've been talking about that are on the table during crossover time. Death penalty repeal, decriminalizing marijuana, the burial of power lines, the gas tax increase, and casino gambling, which we'll talk about in just a minute. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And Kathleen Roney and I was real interested to hear Senator Bradley talk about the death penalty repeal. No one really knows how this is going to go in the Senate.
Yeah, I really think it's unpredictable. I know back in the fall, one of our monitor reporters had called all the senators to try and get them on record. And there were a handful she couldn't – I think there were maybe four or five she couldn't reach. And then there were, you know, five or six who said that they hadn't made up their minds yet. They weren't sure how they were going to go, a mix of Republicans and Democrats. So I think that it's – I would assume that at this point, most of them have probably made up their minds. Whether or not they're going to tell us before they make the vote, we'll see. But it's definitely going to be close. You know, we know that there are some Republicans who are on board with repealing it, some Democrats who aren't. So I don't think it's really a party line issue. And as Senator Bradley said, at least on the Republican side, leadership is not pushing their members to vote one way or the other. So if there are still people that are undecided, we do have a hearing Thursday, and I think that people on both sides of the issue are going to try and make their point one last time. So I'm sure it'll get emotional there, and a lot of people will show up. But it's a toss-up. I think it helps that the governor has said that she supports repeal. We haven't had that before. Both governors, John Lynch and Gene Shaheen. Gene Shaheen did veto it, and so I think that it does help that they know it's not dead on arrival when it gets to the governor's desk. And that might ultimately sway some people to vote for it. But that is, I think, one of the true, really unpredictable votes that we have this session.
Real interesting to hear him say it could even be 12-12 or 13-11 either way. Gary Reno, decriminalizing marijuana. The House passed a lot of marijuana-related legislation this year. How's the Senate going to look at some of this?
Well, I mean, there are two bills that are basically left. One is to reinstate the home grow provision in the medical marijuana program.
Not in the original.
It wasn't in the original. Well, it was in the original bill. It was taken out in the Senate because the governor said that she would veto it if it was still in there. So it got pulled out last year. And this, the House had a bill that basically restored it. So that's one provision. I think the Senate's not going to look too kindly on that. Probably they're going to just say that's enough.
Yeah, they were pretty firm. On the other one, the decriminalization.
The decriminalization is an interesting bill. I mean, it doesn't legalize marijuana. It just makes it essentially a violation, much like a traffic ticket. And that's going to be a difference. As Senator Bradley said, you know, maybe we don't go all that far, but maybe we just look at making the penalties a little bit less, reducing the criminal penalties so that somebody does not have a criminal record going forward.
Something Governor Hassan has said, Gary, she can live with.
She could live with that.
All right. Yeah. Again, the number for you to join us on these bills and some of the others that are still in play, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Back to our listeners. Mike's calling from Berlin. Hi, Mike. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
I would like to say that, you know, on a casino gambling bill, I think that would be a good thing to pass, especially for the North Country. I mean, that would bring tourism more up here. We're very economically strapped here in Berlin. There's not much job. You know, there's not very many jobs here. A lot of us paper workers have been laid off because of the natural gas prices.
Right.
And we're a strapped economy up here. And in order for us to work anywhere, we have to travel miles away from our home.
Yeah, Mike, it's tough, and I'm sorry to hear about your situation. So would you say there's a majority of folks in Berlin who would support this?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Because I think it would bring more jobs to us. And on top of that, promote more tourism. I think it would help the economy here.
Mike, it's great to hear from you, and I definitely want to talk about this issue. So maybe you first, Kathleen. Boy, this issue keeps coming back, expanded gambling. The House shot it down earlier this year. Then the Senate passed a two-casino bill and sent it back over to the House.
Yeah, and of course, you know, a big difference here is the number of casinos. And it does not specifically say in the bill where those casinos would go. I think most people assume that Salem is probably a location for one, but it doesn't specify it. So it could leave room for it to go anywhere else. Maybe it's the Lakes region. Maybe it is up north. We don't really know yet. So it could definitely have the potential to bring jobs to more places than just one casino. But I think that you know, it did already die in the House. And this is a very different, well, not a very different bill. It includes all the regulations that were in the House bill. Senator D'Alessandro from Manchester has been promoting this for years. He's really tried to throw everything into the package to sweeten the deal. And we'll see what happens in the House. You know, the anti-casino voices are saying they've spoken, it's done. I think for everything you add that you might get a few more people on board, you also might chase some people away. So some people who didn't want a monopoly might get on – they thought one casino was a monopoly, might get on board with this. Maybe there are some people who were kind of on the fence, decided to vote for it because it was just one.
And two
and
is
now
too
they're,
much.
Now they're going to back off. Also, two casinos does put the governor in a tricky situation because she's always said one. And she continues to say that one casino is what we need in New Hampshire. It's right for our economy. But what's going to happen if a two-casino bill gets to her desk? I mean, I think we're a long way from that. I think if this does pass the House, there could be, you know, some negotiating if they try and amend it or change it at all. So it's still alive. I think it's going to be a tough road, but there are definitely pieces of this that, you know, voters will support and that certain House members will support, but other pieces that will chase people away. So.
Yeah, Gary, it is confusing because Kathleen's right. The House earlier this year, you know, shot down a one casino. Right. Now you bring in a two casino. Some folks will say, oh, that's better. But some folks will say, no, it's worse. So how's this going to shake out?
I mean, politically speaking, you need to turn about 20 votes.
That's it.
That's about all you really
it's
need to
lot.
Turn. It's not a lot. And one of the key aspects here is the municipal revenue sharing, which was done away with about 4 or 5 years ago when they had a budget crisis. And this would return $25 million to the cities and towns. It's like $4 million almost to Manchester, about $2.5 million to Nashua, well over $1 million to Concord. I mean,
that's a sweetener.
It's a sweetener to a lot of people. And does it turn enough votes? I don't know. I mean, you know, it's sort of each one of these pieces is sort of out there to try to turn a few heads here and make the numbers work. And it's going to be a tough fight, but I mean, it's probably going to be a closer vote than it was before.
Well, and a couple reporters, Gary, have said a lot of this will just come down to who shows up.
It is. It's always amazing who shows up. I mean, when you have 20 or 30 people who aren't there on any given day, I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
All right. Well, Mike, we really appreciate the call. It's an important issue, definitely on the table. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Reim Show, an update on the Affordable Care Act at the end of its first enrollment phase, then the environmental outlook, possible proof of the Big Bang Theory, all coming up on the Diane Reim Show.
The Diane Reim Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather, partly sunny for today, high temperatures low to mid-40s, partly cloudy tonight, lows from around 20 in the North Country, ranging lower 30s in southern parts of the state. It'll be partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, with highs from lower 40s north, ranging lower 50s in the south. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Franklin Pierce University, offering their online Master of Education and Teacher Certification programs. Information online at franklinpierce.edu. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, who should fund Fish and Game? Join us for that conversation tomorrow. Today in The Exchange, it's halftime at the State House. Crossover day was last week, where those bills that have passed the House went to the Senate for a vote and vice versa. We're talking about some of the major issues that remain in play, including a gas tax increase, a bill to repeal the death penalty, once again expanded gambling. Join us on those issues and others. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Kathleen Ronayne with the Concord Monitor is with us, along with Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader in New Hampshire Sunday News. And both of you, let's go right back to our listeners. Cheryl's joining us from Hudson. Hi, Cheryl, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment about the repeal of the death penalty. in our state, and I'm not going to give an opinion on which way I think it should go, but I'm going to give an opinion on what I find is an absurdity that Governor Hassan agrees to sign a repeal of the death penalty in the state of New Hampshire, but only if you put to death Michael Addison.
Yeah, so she would not include the Addison case in this. She would not take him off death row if this repeal did happen. Gary Reno, that is a difficult situation.
It is, but I mean, that was always her contention, that she would not sign a death penalty unless it goes forward. It doesn't have a retroactive aspect to it, mainly because of Michael Addison. And I mean, just because he's on death row doesn't mean that he's ever going to be
executed.
I mean, he could be on death row for the rest of his life.
Just given how these things have gone in other states.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call, Cheryl. Joining us now on the phone is Terry Norelli. She's a Democratic representative from Portsmouth and the Speaker of the New Hampshire House. And Speaker Norelli, great to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Well, a moment ago we had Senator Bradley on, and I asked him how he's feeling about the work of the legislature thus far. Same question for you, Speaker Norelli. How are you feeling about especially the work that the House has done at this midpoint?
Well, I'm actually feeling like we've had a good year so far this year on top of what I think was an excellent year last year. So things are moving along, a lot of bipartisanship, a lot of work between the chambers, and looking forward to taking a look now at what the Senate has sent us and working with them on the bills that we've sent them.
Well, and I'd love to ask about a couple of the bills that they sent over to you. As we were just discussing, Speaker Norelli, another casino gambling bill, this one for two casinos after the House rejected a one casino measure earlier this year. Any idea, Speaker Norelli, about how the House is going to feel about this new sweetened casino bill?
No, I don't. I think as with every other casino bill that the House has taken up, this is, first of all, a nonpartisan issue, as are a lot of our issues, but this one in particular is a nonpartisan issue. But members, committees, and the members will give it a full review and vote how they see fit.
The surplus also, issue also, Speaker Norelli, the House voted to put half of the state surplus into Health and Human Services. The Senate has said it should all go into the Rainy Day Fund, which they say is pretty depleted. How are you guys going to resolve this? It's a pretty big difference.
It is a big difference, but I think that we agree on the importance of the Rainy Day Fund, and that's why the House wants to double the Rainy Day Fund by putting $8 million of the, not of the surplus. Let's remember that we spent all of the surplus except for $15 million that the Senate didn't anticipate. So all of the rest of it we put into programs I would add that the governor, the Senate, and the House all agreed were important priorities. And then we took back-of-the-budget cuts for them, quite a few. And so I think the House feels strongly that not only should we put some money into the Rainy Day Fund, that in addition to that, filling just the one smaller piece of the back of the budget cut for Health and Human Services would be really important. And the fact that the state just had to settle a mental health lawsuit to the tune of millions of dollars tells us a lesson that we should learn, that we need to fund critical services as opposed to ending up in court and then having to pay millions, as we did in the case of mental health, in legal fees instead of in services for people that need them.
So spending this money might be insurance that this mental health settlement is rolled out correctly.
Absolutely.
And without trouble.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll see how that one plays out. I did want to ask you about another one, Speaker Norelli. The Senate sent you a bill making it easier to restore the gun rights of someone who had lost those rights in the case of mental illness to have those mental health records annulled after the mental health issue was felt to be resolved. How are House members going to feel about this? This is a tough one.
Well, I do think it raises a lot of interesting questions, and the House will take a very serious look at it. I think one of the things that I've learned in my 18 years in the legislature is that very few issues are black and white. Most of them have lots of shades of gray, and those are the kinds of things they'll be looking at in committee on the House side, particularly with respect to that bill.
What about the 4-cent gas tax increase, Speaker Norelli? Far less than what the House wanted last year, but it's still an increase. What do you think?
I have been noticing just how horrific the roads are this year. Yes, we had a bad winter, but that bad winter was on top of poorly maintained roads because there isn't enough funding to properly maintain them. And so I think that the House will look very favorably on moving the ball forward. That's not enough to do everything that we should be doing, but it at least is a step in the right direction. And the House is already on record supporting an increase to strengthen our infrastructure. It's really important for our economy. It's important for businesses, and it's important for public safety.
I'll ask you the same political question that I asked Senator Bradley. Regardless of how some of these bills end up, which votes do you think it's important for Democrats to be on record as supporting? Which ones are you really going to want voters to know that you guys supported?
Well, I think the ones that Democrats feel are important to the citizens, to the businesses, and to the quality of life in our state. For instance, I think it was critical that we expanded access to health care to 50,000 Granite Staters. I think the fact that the minimum wage was eliminated last year here in New Hampshire, and now the House has passed legislation that not only restores that but will increase it, is very important. The House has worked on a number of issues, a number of bills around domestic violence protections, and I know that we're getting some from the Senate as well, which will be important. And maybe lastly, I would say there are a number of bills that seek protections for working men and women, and including the minimum wage, of course, but also paycheck equity, social media privacy, and protections for payroll cards.
All right. Speaker Norelli, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Terry Norelli, Democratic State Representative from Portsmouth and the Speaker of the New Hampshire House. One more time, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477 as we take stock of the legislature at this midpoint. 1-800-892-6477. And Kathleen and Gary, right back to our listeners. John's calling from Laconia. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, Ms. Kanoy. Thanks for taking my call again.
Sure.
In regards to what the gentleman from Berlin mentioned, and then the response, I don't know which one of your call, which one of your panel responded to him, but was I to understand, the question is, was I to understand that they're not sure where they're thinking of putting these casinos that they're about to vote on? And if so, isn't it lean towards an uninformed decision? And just a comment to follow that, I don't see it going somewhere in Berlin, although those people in that land up there could sure use it. It's beautiful country up there. I see it going, like she said, to possibly Salem or Portsmouth, where cruise ships can come in, buses from Boston and trains and, you know, easy access. So how much are the people that need to benefit going to benefit? For example, unemployed in Berlin, how are they going to benefit from a casino?
Yeah, John, great question. And, you know, this is a tough point, Kathleen. He's right. From what I understand, when the House votes on this two-casino bill, nobody said where those casinos are going to go. It's going to be an open bidding process. Is that right?
Yeah, I think people have ideas of where they'd like the casinos to go. But I think that it's been important for some senators and representatives to say we don't want to spell out where this has to go, because we want it to be a truly fair competitive bidding process, and we want to find, we want to get the best deal, we want to get the deal that is right for the most people in New Hampshire. And if you put right in the bill where it's going to go, you might it becomes maybe a monopoly, like some people said, or not a competitive process. So, again, you know, I think there are ideas, though, of where it could go. Salem is a big one. Maybe Portsmouth. Maybe the Lakes region. North Country. I don't know. That probably is less likely. The caller's probably right than some of these other areas. But as Gary said, there is the revenue sharing portion in the bill that I think some people are going to try to use as a selling point to say money will go to every community. Of course, the smaller you are, the less money you get. How much of an impact will it really have on every single individual's property tax bill? You know, probably not too much. But there are ways that people will try to sell the deal to people in different areas. But whether it's going to bring jobs to Berlin, I mean,
who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, thank you for the call, John. And, you know, imagine you're a state rep from Berlin, Gary, and you don't like casinos. But, gee, if they were in your town, then, you know, maybe you could support it. But our call is right. You don't know where it's going to go. So
you don't know where it's
that may
go.
Help inform your vote.
I know. I mean, there have been bills in the past that actually would have located a casino. It had to be in the North Country.
Or the Lakes region,
or Salem, or wherever. And none of those have ever flown very far because most people don't think that that's a very good way of doing it.
I did want to ask you both a couple more questions. The minimum wage, Speaker Norelli talked about how she wanted to get Democrats on record as supporting a higher minimum wage here in the Granite State. Gary, as I understand, that's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. Is that correct?
Well, last session, the Senate killed a bill that would have increased the minimum wage, and the Senate membership hasn't changed. And the Senate is always sort of more pro-business than the House has been over the years traditionally. And as most businesses are opposed to the increase in the minimum wage, there's not much likelihood that it's ever going to pass the Senate.
Another bill that Speaker Norelli talked about, Kathleen, how the state surplus should be used. The $15 million, the House and Senate had different ideas. The House wants to put about half of it back to Health and Human Services. The Senate says all should go in the rainy day fund. And I have read that the Senate feels quite firmly about this.
Yes, I think they do. I think it's very unlikely that any of the 13 Republican senators are going to break ranks on that. So it's hard to see money for HHS getting through the Senate. I think that they have come to a decision where they're at. I think the Republican leadership has probably been pretty firm on where the Republicans are going to be at. I don't see any of them breaking away. I think that it's – I would say it's one of the issues that is – more settled. I don't think there's much room for the Senate to change their minds.
Gary.
Logistically, the Senate doesn't have to do anything. The House sent them two bills. One was the $7 million for Health and Human Services. Another one was an $8.5 million for to pay for the mental health settlement. And if the Senate doesn't do anything with those bills, sends them to interim study or whatever, it's over. It's all going into the rainy day fund at the end of the biennium.
And there are all these terms that we're going to hear, Gary, in the next couple months, right? Interim study, tabled.
Mm-hmm.
Are all these sort of polite deaths for these bills?
Some are polite, some aren't. But mostly, they're polite deaths for the bills.
Kathleen, you had mentioned that the House had passed a bill placing some restrictions on the use of cell phones and other handheld devices while driving, and that the Senate's hearing on that bill today, a Senate committee.
Yes. I believe it's the Senate Transportation Committee today at 1:45. They're going to have a hearing on that. That bill is really interesting to me. I think it's one that impacts nearly every adult in the state because, you know, we do have strong distracted driving laws here in New Hampshire, but we don't have a specific law that says you can't talk on your cell phone while driving. A lot of other states do. New York, where I'm originally from, there is that law. It's been in place for a long time. But I think there were a lot of questions on the House floor about what exactly this bill did. Did it prevent you from making a call and putting your cell phone on speakerphone and setting it on your seat? Or what if you're at a stoplight? Can you punch something into your GPS? And as it's written now, it's pretty strict. You can't use handheld devices even when you're at a stoplight or at a stop sign. You're supposed to pull over, but people questioned, what about safety issues on the highway? You know, you pull over on the highway to take an important call, and then you're trying to get back on the highway. Is that dangerous? So a lot of questions. I think we're going to hear a lot of those questions in the Senate hearing. I would guess that if the Senate's going to do anything with it, I don't think it would go through as is. I think there'd be some changes to it because there are some just logistical questions about how this would really play out. And you also have concerns that were raised on the House floor of, one, how much should we be telling adults what they can and can't do? People can make their own safety decisions. But also, what if you're mom or dad, and you're driving home and your kid gets in some emergency and you see the call, but you're not supposed to pick it up, and you do, and you get pulled over. So all of these interesting questions. Other states obviously have done it. I don't know the statistics about how much it does to prevent accidents.
To improve safety.
Or if people follow it. I don't know. But I think that the hearing's going to be really interesting, and we're going to see if some of those kinks in the bill can be worked out, and if it does get through the Senate. I don't know. I really have no idea how it's going to go, but I think it's a really interesting bill and one that every driver would feel the effects of.
Yeah, no matter how much or how little they use a phone in the car. Everybody's got an opinion on this. Mm-hmm. So, Gary, real quickly, how's 2014 going to shape how the issues are dealt with from here on out?
Well, I mean, it's an election year. They're always hot-button issues. I mean, we've gone through the abortion in the House and various issues like that. Everybody's lining up their issues and trying to get everybody in a row. And, you know, the Democrats are going to be the party of the working people, and the Republicans are going to be the party with the no taxes and no fees. And here we go.
Right. Well, both of you, you've been really helpful. Thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it. Kathleen, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kathleen Ronayne, State House reporter for the Concord Monitor. Gary, great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary Raynow, State House reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Ellen Grimm. Happy birthday, Ellen. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, who should fund Fish and Game? This agency does a lot more than just serve hunters and anglers. It's involved in search and rescue, land conservation, habitat management. But hunting and fishing license fees are the only revenue source. Now there's a hard look at expanding that base to hikers, canoers, and the many others who enjoy the great outdoors. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio with the Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock. New Hampshire weather, partly sunny today with high temperatures low to mid-40s, partly cloudy tonight, lows from around 20 in the North Country, ranging lower 30s in southern parts of the state. Partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, highs lower 40s north, ranging lower 50s in the south. Support for NHPR comes from UR listeners and from TransCanada, relicensing three existing hydroelectric stations on the Connecticut River to provide renewable energy, property and business taxes, and good jobs for the next generation.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. The deadline for signing up for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act expired at midnight last night. A surge in traffic on healthcare.gov caused some problems for the website, but health officials say the last-minute sign-up rush could put the total